is it you want? Real estate.
It's the Red Hot Real Estate Show, where we can all find out how's it going for buyers and sellers in the real estate market.
I have died and gone to real estate heaven.
Looking to move? Hoping to sell? Call in with your questions to real estate expert Mimi Shoneman with RE/MAX Results.
I'm going to go out and buy a house.
Here she is, your host, Mimi Shoneman.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us here on the Red Hot Real Estate Show. I'm Ms. Shannon, and Mimi Shoneman, she's actually too red hot this morning and couldn't make it in this morning. But we are still joined from our good friend, Phil Olson from American Mortgage and Equity. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
You look bright and shiny today.
I am bright and shiny.
And I am surprised that you don't look exhausted, because you told me before we started the show that it has been very, very busy out there in the real estate and mortgage world.
It is absolutely unbelievable.
All right. We have a lot of information, but before I let you tell all that stuff, let's do all the legal stuff. So can we give everybody your NMLS number, please?
You betcha. It's NMLS 238-103, branch NMLS 379-094, company NMLS 150953.
Okay, so I know we have a lot of stuff to cover. So first of all, before we get to all the amazing information, why has it been so busy out there, Phil?
It has to do with low inventory, a lot of buyers out there. I think interest rates, because they've risen a little bit, has gotten people off the fence. The main conundrum out there, though, is there's so little inventory that people are literally, it's like sharks in the water.
Wow. Okay. So if you have something and you see a house and you think, this is the house for me, you have to be ready to get that right away.
Yeah. Matter of fact, you're probably writing up your purchase agreement in the car right outside the house.
All right. So what we do every week on the Red Hot Real Estate Show is help get you prepared to get the home of your dreams. We're going to do that again this morning. If you have a call, you can call in at six. If you have a question, you can call in at 651-641-1071. That's 651-641-1071. Because every week when you call in, you can get a copy of our things to do, consider when buying a home, and things to consider when selling a home. But we also have a great opportunity. And what is it that you want to do again, Phil, for every caller that calls in today?
Well, in the last show, we accumulated $150 in donations for a local woman's food woman's shelter. What I'd like to do is I'd like to really bump that number up. So I'm going to give another $50 for every call in, and hopefully Mimi and I can donate $500, $700,
Wonderful.
Whatever it happens to be. So call on in. Would love to be able to answer your questions.
And a lot of you have been sitting on that question. You're like, I don't have time to call. Now here's a great time for you to call, get the answer that you need, and also help Phil and Mimi do a great thing for a local organization here in the Twin Cities. So I know we got Sonny ready, because you were like, we needed some fanfare and stuff. So what are we going to talk about again today?
Well, right now, what we're going to talk about is I think we need to talk a little bit more about the market.
Yes.
And why is it so hot?
Okay.
So, couple things. Buyers want to buy while rates are still low.
Okay.
Now, I hear that people are saying, "Oh my God, the rates are high." Well, let's go back to the 1970s, 1980s. Interest rates were at 13%. People were still buying homes.
Right.
So, when I talk with a consumer, for one, I say, "Forget the rate. Let's build the mortgage based on affordability, based on a budget."
Okay.
And guess what? If we do that, it really doesn't make a difference what the rate is. Okay?
Right.
Secondly, a lot of people don't know that all the interest, or a good portion of that interest, they can write off in their tax returns.
Okay.
Okay. Which allows them to get more money back from the federal government at the end of the year, which actually makes their mortgage payment less.
All right.
So housing prices are going up. They've been going up now for about the last 3 years, almost 10% annually. Builders are not building affordable homes.
Okay.
If we have buyers that can afford $150 to even $300,
yes,
you're not going to find that in a new build.
And that's a broad spectrum. That price range right there is really huge.
That's a really huge spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are builders that are building in northern Minnesota, southern Minnesota. You can probably get, you know, a 2,400 square foot split level type of home. And you can get that for maybe $250,000. But how about all these buyers that are wanting to buy that small house in Minneapolis, $150,000, $180,000? I have two buyers, believe it or not, looked at a home for $194,000. Another one looked at it at 203.
Okay.
Went on the market here on Thursday.
Yes.
They visited it on Saturday, and they were up against 10 other offers,
wow,
both of those clients. And they're going, Phil, what do we offer? I go, well, how badly do you want the house?
Exactly.
So getting back to what's happening with this market, okay, sellers are afraid to sell because they want to buy,
mm-hmm,
and they're afraid they won't be able to find their dream home once they sell their house.
So they're just making do with what they already have.
So that's why some of that inventory isn't going out there, because that seller is going, oh my God, my house is going to sell in 24, 48 hours.
Right.
And now where do I move?
Exactly.
Now, as part of our show today, we're going to talk about alternative financing methods. One of the things you can do is instead of putting your house up for sale, you buy your house first.
Okay.
Then you move your stuff out of your house into the new house. And maybe you're going to go, well, I want to put 20% down and I don't have 20% down. Well, how about putting 5% down? And then when you sell your house, we can completely recalibrate your old mortgage that you took out on this new home, pay down the principal, re-annuitize basically your mortgage or re-amortize it.
Yes.
And now remove that PMI and lower that payment with that 20%
down. And what's PMI again, Phil?
Private mortgage insurance.
Okay.
Okay. And anytime a consumer is not putting 20% down, there is some form of mortgage insurance. Now,
okay,
some people might say, well, my lender did a loan with no mortgage insurance. My comeback to that would be, well, then they probably did what's called lender paid mortgage insurance.
Okay.
Which means that your interest rate is actually higher.
Because they rolled it in somewhere else?
They rolled it into the interest rate. Rather than the consumer making an individual PMI payment, it's rolled right into the interest rate.
That's always one of the most interesting things I find when I'm talking to you, Phil, when you come in here and you give us all this information. Because you do hear, like when we hear about you can just use some automated service to get your mortgage approved. I mean, your loan approved, and they do it like this rubber stamp thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, okay, well, they told me no, or I got this answer and didn't understand it. It's because a lot of those systems may only work with one product. And then, but you work with a host and a variety of different products, so you can kind of work with a person based upon what their need is.
Correct. It, coming to me is like going to Cub.
Okay.
Okay. In the mustard aisle.
Yes.
There's 50 different types of mustard.
One. Okay. Gotcha.
All right. Mm-hmm. So I work with over 60 different lenders. Every one of these lenders have different programs. They all have different guidelines, and you can. Basically, if you listed all of them on paper, you'd find out, oh my God, everyone is different.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that way, when a consumer works with me, I'm able to actually look at their total situation, all their assets, all their income, and then go, what is going to be the best program that's going to meet that consumer's specific need?
Gotcha. Okay, so we are actually always happy to have you call into the Red Hot Real Estate Show. If you've been holding on to a mortgage question, today is the day to call. And we have Peg that's on the phone right now. Peg, I'm sorry, what do you got going on today, and what would you like to ask Phil?
Morning, Peg.
Oh, well, I was just driving home from church. I go occasionally. And I turned on the program because it's usually on the gals, you know, on the weekdays, but he was on there. I have kind of a dumb question, but I have a home that's paid for. I'm in my 60s. I just retired. I have a home that's paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth about $400,450. It's a townhome in a good area.
Yep.
And I just wondered if there's any wisdom, in your opinion, for me to take like half of that money out and invest it in real estate. Other than, I have other money invested in other things, and I just thought you might have some ideas on that idea.
Well, when it comes to it is buying investment properties, I'm a big believer in being very broad, diversified with your investment portfolios, be it your 401ks, IRAs, stocks,
yep,
bonds, annuities. And if the market goes down and you're diversified broad enough, the amount of declining or shares that you're going to have is going to be a lot far less than if you've got all your money in one or two egg baskets.
So it would be an okay idea if the market was right.
If the market's right, and what I tell an investor, when and I do lots of investment property purchases, is you cannot fall in love with the house. You have to fall in love with the financials of the transaction, be it the cash flow. Now, as an investor, you can go one of two routes. You're either a short-term investor or you're a long-term investor. A long-term investor, you're going to have some form of lease, contract for deed, or something attached to that property, or you're going to buy the property, fix it up, and then turn it, and you want to turn it as quickly as possible because every month you keep that property, you're going to continue to pay property taxes, interest, insurance, all those types of things. But I would be glad to talk with you on hopefully working with you to put together a great investment strategy for you.
Okay. How do I contact you?
Peg, you know what we can do, if that's okay, is that our producer, Sonny, is going to get your information right now. Is that okay, Phil?
Okay.
So producer Sonny will get her information, and then he can go ahead and give you a call back after the show.
Would love to do that.
It's not going to work today because I'm going to basketball games all day into the evening. So I'm home during the day, during the week.
Perfect.
And you can give me a call then.
I'll give you a call tomorrow.
Hold on, Peg. We'll go ahead and get your information. And we do want to take more calls. Carly, I know you're on your way to church, but we're going to take your call when we get back. And what else are we going to cover today, Phil?
We're going to cover alternative creative financing loan programs for people that are retired and also for people that have a lesser income than the median average.
All right. We'll talk about that. And we're going to pick up Carly here on the Red Hot Real Estate Show when we return. Thank you for joining us here on the Red Hot Real Estate Show on My Talk 107.1. I'm Ms. Shannon, and normally we are also joined by your Red Hot Real Estate host, Mimi Schoeneman. She had to take the day off, but we still have your good friend, Phil Olson from American Mortgage and Equity. You can always go to his website, callphilolson.com, and we'll talk more about that. But Carly, thank you so much for joining us here on the Red Hot Real Estate Show. Good morning. I know you're on your way to church, so thanks for taking a break and calling in with your question.
Hi. Okay, my question is kind of a twofold thing. My income is kind of low right now, and my mortgage is very high. And I'm trying to get rid of the PMI. They did finally take my PMI off, only they didn't take the entire amount out. They took half of it out. When I've tried to call them back, they won't call me. They don't return my phone calls. My other question is, I found another mortgage company that came to my mail. I don't know how legitimate they are, but they swear that it doesn't matter what my income is. They can help me get a new mortgage with lower rates and lower mortgage per month.
Okay. What do I think about that? I would say it's all in the verbiage of the letter, and sometimes you can't trust what the letter says.
Right.
There are so many different, I'm going to say, marketing schemes out there that try to get the consumer to call in. I would definitely recommend that you're working with a very seasoned and professional mortgage loan officer that has tons and tons of capability to look at your specific situation. I understand that you're trying to get the PMI removed. PMI can be removed based on an appraisal.
Yes, I had an appraisal.
Yep. Understand that it is the lender that probably hired the appraiser. There are lenders out there, believe it or not, that are very conservative when it comes to the exact appraised value. It also depends on the type of current mortgage loan that you currently have.
It's a Freddie Mac.
You have a Freddie Mac. Okay, yeah. So it's not an FHA.
No.
Okay, and under Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, there is no such thing as a product out there that's not going to take your full income into play in order to determine qualifying purposes. And then Minnesota law also says that the consumer has to be able to afford the mortgage, and all the income has to be calculated based on what's called debt-to-income ratios. But guess what? I would love to be able to take a look at your situation.
Thank you.
It's a puzzle. I'm a fantastic mortgage puzzle maker. All right. And if anybody can figure this out, I'll figure it out for you. And if I can help you now, I promise you, I will help you in the future.
Oh, please. All right. So I gave them my phone number and my email.
Perfect. My name is Phil Olson with American Mortgage and Equity Consultants, and I look forward to helping you.
Bless you. Thank you so much. Just to let you know that I have an appointment with this mortgage company on Wednesday, so if you could call me before that, that would be great. That way I could make a decision.
I can call you here today, ma'am.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Phil.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Thanks, Carly. And if you have a question, you can call Phil right now at the Red Hot Real Estate Show at 651-641-1071. That's 651-641-1071. Not only is Phil giving out amazing information this morning, he's also making a donation to a very worthy local organization just for you calling in and getting your question answered. So, again, you're giving $50 per call to a local women's shelter.
Is that correct?
What we decided, Phil?
Absolutely.
And that is just, you know, it's awesome because you don't have to do that. You're already providing a great service, but it is wonderful that you're, you know, again, a local business guy, a local mortgage consultant, and also willing to do great things here in the Twin Cities.
I love volunteering and I love giving back to the community.
One of the things I thought was fantastic about what you were saying to Carly is you were talking about how you, you know, it's a puzzle. And that you're really good and you enjoy helping put together all of the pieces of this puzzle for your clients.
Correct.
Because sometimes they don't know where to start, I'm sure. I wouldn't know where to start.
It is a big puzzle. And then the other problem is if you're not working with a mortgage lender that thinks like a puzzle.
Right.
Then guess what? They're going to miss pieces.
Okay.
Those pieces, okay, can be the difference in a loan approval, a lower interest rate, a better program, especially if they're just trying to do volume, they're not thinking about the consumer, they're just pushing product.
Yes.
Okay, I'm not going to push product. My job is to sit down with you. I'm going to ask you tons and tons of questions.
Right.
I want to understand what you're trying to accomplish. And then I have to ask myself the questions, how do we do that based on your employment, your income, how you're paid, your investments, what you have in money, what you don't have in money, what's the possibilities you have. And then maybe I hone that down to maybe two or three programs. And now I actually will sit down with the customer and say, okay, based on everything you've presented here, okay, and based on all these puzzle pieces that we have, we could do this, 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 or this. But guess what? Every one of these programs has a positive and everyone has a negative. But my mind thinks is, how can I make this payment as affordable for the consumer as possible? Because that's really what the consumer's concerned with is
right.
In buying a house. They want to love their home, but they want to be able to afford it.
Because okay? You can't love it if you can't pay for it.
No. Mm-hmm. And a matter of fact, I just closed a loan here this last week where the consumer didn't have a lot of money to put into their transaction. And I was able to come up with a program that doesn't have PMI on it.
Right.
There's no mortgage insurance, but guess what? It's built into the rate.
Okay.
But when you compare another program with the PMI at the lower rate compared to the program with no PMI, it saved them $150 a month.
And that's a big deal for a lot of families out there.
That's big money.
Right.
You know, you're literally talking $1,800 a year. That's cash. A lot. That can go a long way.
It seems like, Phil, it's like sometimes the stories that you're telling is that, you know, it's really just getting the people to take that first step of actually contacting you. Because, you know, as a potential home buyer, sometimes you're just sitting there going, I know the answer is going to be no, or they're not going to be able to help me. So we don't even try. And so what you seem to be encouraging people is go take the time to call, take the time to sit down with me. The answer may not be no, or it may not be, well, not this week, but in 6 months time, we can do this.
I'm going to relate this to the previous show.
Mm-hmm.
She was talking about planning
right.
at 30, 40, 50.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to help you plan.
Right.
I'm going to give you all the tools. And guess what? Then based on those tools, based on that plan and what you're bringing to the table, I can set up a realistic timeline for you or expectation of what you're going to be able to accomplish and when you're going to be able to accomplish that.
Perfect. And if you have a question, again, we are making a donation to a local women's shelter for every call that we get today at 651-641-1071. Again, the number is 651-641-1071. Jean, good morning. How are you? Thanks for calling the Red Hot Real Estate Show.
I'm good. Thank you.
Good morning, Jean.
Good morning.
Go ahead with your question for Phil, please.
Okay, Phil. I have two rental properties, and they're both on ARMs.
Okay.
And I have my own home, which is on like a 4.25%
Okay.
percent. I'm looking at potentially refinancing those. I'm trying to avoid all the major costs to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me kind of a ballpark as to what rates are running for a refi?
I pause just a second, Gene and Phil? So she said an ARM. What's an ARM for everyone
that
listening?
That is called an adjustable rate mortgage.
Okay. And what's the difference between that and other mortgages, Phil?
Well, you got different types of ARMs. You got 3-1s, 5-1s, 7-1s, 10-1s. And when I say that first number 3, mm-hmm. okay, that means it's going to be fixed
okay.
for the first 3 years. And then after that, it can adjust dependent on the ARM. Okay, it could be a 1-2-1 or whatever it happens to be, meaning it can adjust as much as, let's just say, 2% in the fourth year.
Okay.
And then it could adjust another 1% every year after that with a cap. And normally your caps are 5 or 6,
okay.
which means if her interest rate was, say, 4, once it gets into that adjustment period and it goes through the number of years, it could literally get to 10%.
Okay.
So those are they can be very risky products, okay? But since she put them on investment properties, I believe that's a far better strategy to do it on an investment property than you would put that on your primary residence. So where are rates? I would say they're anywhere between 0.5% to 0.75% higher than your standard rate for a purchase transaction or a refinance transaction, because investment property interest rates are always much higher than, say, a second home or a primary residence.
Is that true if you have a large amount of equity?
I would tell you that the large amount of equity is going to be very beneficial because that will pull down the rate.
Okay.
What are your current rates right now?
They're in the 3s now. They were down in the 2s.
Okay.
They've gone up into the mid-3s, but I know things are going up. So mm-hmm. I just am getting to the point where I'm thinking maybe I should do something.
I would tell you it comes down to what your short-term and your long-term strategy is on those specific properties. And
right.
I would be glad to take a look at it and run the numbers for you to see what makes sense. It may not make sense for you to refi.
Right.
Because if you're going to sell these properties in 2 to 3 years, I would tell you don't refi. Okay. But if you're planning on keeping these properties really long term, then I would have to know what the adjustment rate schedules are on those specific properties to tell you what the maximum rate could be and what your positive or your negative could be. And believe me, it could be a scary situation down the road.
I understand all of that. But I mean, we have a huge amount of equity mm-hmm. in both of them.
Okay.
And we bought one in 2003 and the other one in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had them for quite a while. So they've, run down quite a bit.
Sure. Well, that's outstanding.
Is there a certain low level of a mortgage that is, that you'd like to see? I mean, that you don't want to see where the rates go up if it's like, I've heard some people say that if it was under like 120, that the rates are higher. If it's under 130, the rates are higher because there's not as much money for the lender.
Correct. I would say those are probably start at about $100,000.
$100,000.
Mm-hmm. And then
okay.
If the loan amount is less than $100,000, and I'd have to actually look in the books, but normally you could be easily looking at an additional 0.8% higher interest rate, but it's not substantial.
Right. But you could, if you could take extra cash out of it then, if it was something that it's close to that. But
if you wanted to take cash out on an investment property refinance, you can do that.
Right.
All right, Gene. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing
that scenario.
We'll get your contact information. You can follow up with Phil, and maybe he has some additional numbers for you. Is that cool?
Perfect. That'd be wonderful.
All right,
I'd love to help you.
Hold on. Okay. Our producer, Sonny, is going to get that information. We have plenty of time to take more calls. I know we got somebody on hold right now, and we'll get to that. And also, what else do we need to cover again this morning, Phil, when we return?
I'd really like to talk about alternative creative financing loans, specifically for it is retirees and for those that are below a median income average.
All right. You'd like to talk about it? We'd like to hear it here on the Red Hot Real Estate Show when we get right back. Thank you for joining us here on the Red Hot Real Estate Show. Mimi Shoneman is off today. I'm Miss Shannon. Joined with Phil Oyson from American Mortgage and Equity. Hello again, Phil.
Rocking the house.
Phil, you've been giving people some great information today. Again, we like to encourage people to go to your website, callphilolson.com. And again, the number that you like to give out if they want to call you personally.
651-238-6748. Call me anytime between 7 in the morning, 9 o'clock at night, Monday through Sunday. I promise I'll answer.
And I like that you work with clients who might have kind of a story outside of what they think would be a shiny, happy, immediately you got approved storyline. So if they're a little outside of that window, you can still work with them and you have some great products that's available for
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're going to talk about two things. So you said you want to talk about people who are maybe on the lower income side and then some people that might be, you know, are we going to go based upon age first or income first? What do you want to do first?
Why don't we talk about retirees?
Okay, let's do that.
And, you know, one of the things that I say, what it really comes down to is in finding your loan officer, your mortgage company, is that loan officer asking you a ton of questions? Matter of fact, there's programs out there right now where they only ask you for your W-2. Well, guess what? You might have a lot of other additional income streams.
Right.
And if those income streams are not explored, that's going to limit the number of different programs or rates that you might be getting. And they're just pushing product.
Right.
Okay. So when we talk about retirees, what are the things that I'm looking at? Okay. One, I'm going to look at all your Social Security income. And guess what? Social Security income can be grossed up normally about 115%.
Oh, okay.
Then you got what's called dividend income.
All right.
Those are monies that you're receiving based on your investments. And as long as you've been receiving dividend income for a period of 2 years, you can actually count that as an income stream.
Okay.
Then you have land income or land producing income.
Is that similar to our last caller, Jean, when she said she had some investment properties?
It could be investment properties. But what happens, let's say I own 50 acres of land and I let the farmer down the road till the land and plant corn. Now we have an income producing piece of land.
Okay.
And guess what? We can use that as income. How about mutual fund distributions? Or how about you've got a mutual fund that's $200,000 and your age is 62 and you haven't even started drawing? Well, guess what? Most lenders will not take that as an income stream because you haven't been drawing off the income. But guess what? There's another way of doing it. It's called annuitizing the income. So let's suppose we have a person that has $1 million in a retirement account, but they're not drawing.
Yes.
I can take that $1 million, divide it by 360 months, and now I can use that as the income.
Oh, okay.
So whatever the math would be on that $1 million divided by 360, and I'm thinking it's probably going to be about $2,800.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can use that as $2,800 a month towards qualifying. A lot of lenders don't even use that program or don't know about it or they can't do it.
Right.
Okay. We got rental income. Now, when people say they have rental income, I really don't know if they have rental income until I see how they do their tax returns.
Okay.
And how they take their write-offs on that specific rental income. And let me give you an example. Let's say they made $20,000 on their rental income this year.
Yes.
But they did $35,000 worth of rehab on the property.
Okay.
And now they claim that $35,000 as rehab on their tax returns.
All right.
Well, guess what? You now have a $15,000 loss, which means you have to take the $15,000 divided by 12, and now that goes against their income.
Okay.
So when I meet with people, I might talk to them about, do you really want to do that rehab?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because it could affect your debt-to-income ratios. All right. How about alimony income? People think just because you're getting alimony income, it can be counted. It can. When's it going to end?
All right.
All right. You have to be able to show that the income stream is going to continue for 3 years.
Okay? Otherwise, you can't include it at all.
Otherwise, you cannot include it. And if it's stepped down, then you have to go with the lower step down figure as well. All right. But it can be used as income. Then you got pension income, farm income, We've already talked about annuitizing. Well, how about home equity? When people say, well, I only have $10,000 in the bank. Well, hold one here. You have a house. It's worth $300. You owe $100. Well, guess what? You have $200,000 in the bank.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. How do we use that? How do we use that in your transaction? Maybe we don't use it, but exploring it and finding out about it gives you that many more options.
And since we're speaking about a potential client that would be a retiree, mm-hmm. does this go back to what you mentioned at the beginning of the show, that maybe this retiree would like to qualify for something right now mm-hmm. before they put their current home on the market? And
Correct.
So this can help them qualify to find the new home and not worry about that potentially, you know, transitional period where they don't have any place to move.
You are absolutely correct. And okay. believe it or not, we could use that home equity as their down payment on their other house.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, I mean, there's so many different ways to spin a mortgage or work with a mortgage puzzle. The question is are you working with a mortgage person that has the capability of manipulating the puzzle?
Fair enough. And I think it's interesting because you mentioned that they should be happy that you're asking so many questions. Because as busy people, you're like, oh my gosh, why are they asking me so many questions? So it seems like a good thing. They just asked me for two things. I hit click on a computer screen and now I'm done. Now, and you're saying, no, that's not the case, because that should be a complicated process.
I'm not saying it should be a complicated process, but it should be a thorough process to understand what are you trying to accomplish. And guess what? The consumer is always coming to us mortgage people going, we want the best program, the best rate, the lowest closing costs. How do you do that when you don't explore everything? And guess what? Once I've explored everything, it allows me then to be able to analyze their situation and say, this will work, this will work, this will work. Which one's better? Which one's worse? What's the downside? What's the upside?
Right.
And then present that to the consumer and they're going, oh my God, Phil, I met with another mortgage guy. He didn't present me, and I hear this all the time.
Right.
They didn't present me with all these options. Well, that's because they didn't do their job. Sorry to say. You know, other income. Okay. We talked about the home equity. How about a non-occupant co-borrower?
I don't even know. What do you mean?
Explain
that
to
me.
So we've got this woman that's 67 years old. She's got limited income. And guess what? Rent is going up and she wants to buy another house.
Yes.
But guess what? She don't qualify for that next house because her income isn't high enough. But yet her son has a great job.
Yes.
Okay. And he goes, Mom, I'd like to help you get into this house. It's perfect for you. It's one level. Your laundry and everything is on the first floor. Well, guess what? I take Mom's information. I take son's information. And guess what? Now I'm going to merge them together so that Mom can qualify for that house. All right. And the non-occupant co-borrower is going, well, what are my legal ramifications here?
Right.
Are they going to take my house? Guess what? There's no cross-collateralization. Meaning, meaning that son owns a primary residence. That's where him and his wife and his family live. And they make the payments every month. And what happens, you know, God forbid, Mom falls behind on the mortgage. No, the mortgage company cannot come after the son's house.
It's just all on this one property.
It's only on this one property, okay? Non-occupant co-borrowers can be a great way to help somebody get to that next step. And then last but not least, how about paying debt at closing to create more cash flow?
Okay.
Okay, so people here, let's say we have $40,000 to put down on a house.
Yes.
Okay. But guess what? $40,000 only knocks the payment down about $5 per thousand.
Okay.
So that's $200, right?
Yes.
But Mr. and Mrs. Smith, they have $1,000 in debt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That $1,000 in debt is $20,000 total indebtedness.
Okay.
Well, how about we put only $20,000 down? We pay off all the debt, which saves them $1,000 a month.
Right.
And guess what? Instead of their mortgage payment, it's going to go up 20, which is $100, right?
Yes.
But guess what? It goes up 100, but I'm going to save you 1,000.
Yes.
Now, might that be a better strategy than you taking every penny you got to put into the next house with another $1,000 obligation on top of it.
Exactly.
So I'm just getting back to, you have to look at the full scenario. What is the consumer presenting? And then present them with viable options that will actually help them.
All right. Well, we had a great scenario there for retirees, but the next population you want to cover when we get back is, again, what?
I want to cover individuals that have less than a median income, which is about less than $100,000 a year.
All right. We have that, and we also can take your calls here on the Red Hot Real Estate Show when we get right back. Thank you for joining us here on the Red Hot Real Estate Show. Your host, Mimi Shoneman, is out today, but we are joined from American Mortgage and Equity. Phil Olson is here. Again, I like to give out your information. It's very easy to remember. Call philolson.com. The phone number, because you do like talking to people during the week, 651-238-6748. Is that right?
You got it.
All right. And today we have been taking calls. There have been some great calls so far on the Red Hot Real Estate Show. That number is 651-641-1071. That's 651-641-1071. And Phil, every time you come on the show, you have really just helped a variety of organizations or had some really cool deals to help people, you know, and today is no exception. So for everyone who calls in today with a quality question of Mr. Olson, he's going to donate $50 to a local woman shelter here in town. So we appreciate you doing that. We've had four so
far. We've had four. $200.
So, perfect.
Got time for two more.
Awesome. Awesome. Again, the number is 651-641-1071. In the meantime, we just finished coming up with some strategies if you were in the scenario of being a retiree.
Yep.
And what you could do to potentially get into a new home. And so now you wanted to talk about a different category of people. Mm-hmm. And that's someone with a, how did you put it, Phil?
It's less than the median income. So let's just say your family makes less than $100,000 a year.
Yes, as a lot of us are in that scenario.
Mm-hmm. I would probably tell you, if the census came out, it'd probably say that 75% of the general public out there is below $100,000 annually.
Right. And when you're looking at that number, sometimes you go, well, that means I got to just take whatever I can get. And you go, no, that's not the case, right?
Absolutely. It's okay. Not the case. You know, so there's really some things we or I do different when I'm working with those specific types of families is I want to find every piece of income that they have, because they're saying, well, Phil, the house we want is 250.
Yes.
Okay. And well, in other words, in order to qualify for 250, your income has to be at this specific level or your debts have to be low enough to compensate to where your debt to income ratios work out.
Right.
Well, there are specific programs out there that, one, will allow for higher debt to income ratios.
Okay.
Which then gives that consumer the ability maybe to buy that little bit nicer home that they were looking for. Or it really comes down to going back to the puzzle again and looking at all the specific income streams. So what are there? There's other income streams out there that I think are missed in the process. How about children's Social Security?
Oh, okay.
So guess what? Mm-hmm. If your children are receiving SSI, that can be used as an income stream. How about those families that have adopted a child and they're receiving adoption income from the state? That can be used as well. How about child support? Child support can be used, but then you have to go back to that 3-year rule again.
Gotcha.
Okay. It's got to continue for 3 years. So if your child is 17, but the divorce decree says that after 18, they're going to continue to receive child support while they're going through higher education, then that income could then be counted again. And I'd say, okay, give me your divorce decree.
Right.
That's where I'm asking for this documentation. How about two part-time jobs?
Yeah.
People think there's lots of people that have two part-time jobs and they go, well, because I've got two part-time jobs, I can now qualify for a home. My comeback is maybe.
Yeah.
Well, because the rule says that if you're going to use two part-time income jobs, you must have been on both jobs continuously for the last 2 years or you cannot count either one.
Okay.
So it comes down to, can you use it? How much can you use? Then the question is there overtime? Well, then there's that other rule again. If you're going to count overtime, you have to be able to show that you've had overtime continuous over the last 2 years.
Okay.
And then sometimes that's not the case. So then you can't count it. How about welfare income?
Okay.
Welfare income can be used as well.
Sure.
Okay. A lot of people don't know
Didn't
that.
Didn't think I could use no. that. Right. Okay.
Okay. Then we've talked already about the alimony. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, what other income streams might be coming through on the tax return? Well, if your mortgage lender only asks you for your W-2.
Yes.
And they don't ask you for your tax return, they might say, well, you qualify for $200. Then again, I look at the tax return and I see dividend income or I see other income streams and I go, Mrs. Smith, no, you qualify for $250.
Because it might be someone like me that has a stack of 1099s and not just all W-2s.
Correct.
Got it. Okay.
All right. Then how about gifted funds? All right.
And what are those again? What do you count those?
Gifted funds are, let's suppose you have an immediate family member that's willing to help you out, and maybe not as a co-borrower. Now, okay. As a co-borrower, they can help you out with your income. They can also help you out with your assets.
Yes.
But if we're using a relative to help gift money to you to help you in a transaction, they can do that. They can legally, as long as that money came from some form of banking institution,
okay,
they can actually use that money. Now, how can that be an important thing? Let's suppose your agent's telling you, you need to make a full offer and you cannot ask for closing costs because if you ask for closing costs, you're not going to get the house.
Right.
And they're going, I'm $4,000 short.
Yes.
Well, guess what? Now we get the relative to help with the $4,000. They're going to pay their own down payment. And then we're going to use the $4,000 to help cover the closing costs. And then maybe we're still short by $2,000. Well, then what I'll do is I can present the option of let's adjust the rate up by, let's say, 0.375%.
Right.
Okay. And guess what? Now you get what's called a lender rebate of $2,500 from the lender. So now we got the $4,000, we got the $25,000, we got the closing costs covered, you got your down, and oh, by the way, now you can make that offer with no closing costs.
And again, the puzzle is complete. Perfect. Mm-hmm.
The puzzle's always in the works because it changes on every single home.
Perfect. And Phil, we have a question real quick, and this one is a little different. So Lynn, you have a question about refinancing?
Right.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
My mortgage is less than 4 years. I own only $35,000 left.
Yep.
But the thing is, I just got a new roof, so that's going to be added to my debt to
income. Debt to income ratio. Did you take out a loan to fix the roof?
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, it really depends on what the interest rate is on that roof would then determine if it would be worth you doing what's called a cash out refinance, consolidating the first mortgage along with the second loan. And then I can take a look at what's called the two different interest rates and pair them together to tell you what your true rate is on your outgoing house expense. And that's really what will then determine, would it be worth refinancing or not? More than likely, I'm going to probably tell you it's not going to be worth refinancing because with such a small loan of $35,000, it takes a really, really long time to recoup your closing costs. But unless I know what your rates are and how much you owe and what you need to do, I couldn't just verbally tell you it makes sense or not.
Okay.
But Lynn, if you hold on, producer Sonny will get your information and Phil can help you run those numbers at a later date. Is that cool?
Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn. Thanks for joining us this Sunday. And I just like watching you get excited about helping people, Phil. It's one of my favorite parts of the week is watching you go, somebody just asked me a lot of numbers questions and you never look like not daunted at all. Just happy with it, whether you got a calculator in your hand or not. You're always ready to help.
I mean, I think all good investment decisions should be based on some form of math.
Right.
And the math needs to be true and concise. And that's really what will help a consumer determine what is the best thing for me to do.
Right.
And then you have to ask the question, what is the short term? And then what's the long term goal? Because if it doesn't match the short term, I'll probably say then it's not worth doing.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Because I think sometimes it is, as you said, like, and even the fact that you brought up what we were talking about with our friend Cassandra from Clear Step Financial, mm-hmm. as a mom, as somebody that is running my family, I am trying to decide what's best for my family and best for my son 10 years down the road. You know, he just turned 10. I'm still thinking, well, what's he going to do and what scenario would I be in when he's 20?
Mm-hmm.
And so, looking into, is it time for me to buy? What house should I buy? It's only the two of us right now, but what's going to be a good decision for him later? It's so much more comforting to be able to talk to someone like you to go, well, I can't crystal ball this future, but this is probably a wise decision for you and your family, and here's how we can make it happen.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you with what you're saying there. It just really comes back to, what are you trying to accomplish? Home ownership is far cheaper in the short and long term than renting, because the renter's rebate stops, I believe, at like $42,000.
Definitely.
So you don't get any monies back there. And when you do, it's like a check for $350.
Right.
Well, guess what? You can write off all your interest on your home loan. And guess what? For the first 10 years, you're going to get a big whopping check back as long as your income isn't excessive. And what do I mean by that? Once you start hitting $90,000, it's going to slowly get smaller and smaller. But guess what? Your average person that makes, say, $60,000 a year and has $10,000 in interest that they're writing off on their home loan will probably equate back to a check of $6,500 from the federal government.
Thank you for everyone who called in today. I know we have somebody on hold. We'll get your information. And Phil will, of course, follow up with you. We'll have you on again very soon, Phil. I want to remind everybody they can find you at callphilolson.com or 651-238-6748. Thanks for joining us, Phil, and thanks for making that donation to that woman's shelter.
Awesome.
We'll see you again soon. You can find all this information at mytalk1071.com, keyword red hot.